This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
All right, let's talk to B. Mac Bryant McFadden, two-time Super Bowl champion with the Pittsburgh Steelers, NFL analyst for CBS. B. Mac, man, the countdown to the draft is on. I want to start with this Steelers visit with Shedeur Sanders. I will ask you two things. One, why now? Why not earlier? And two, do you feel like, what's the percentage that they would move to go get Shedeur Sanders if he is within striking range?
Well, I think the time, well, we're 2 weeks away from the draft, so you're trying to do as much due diligence as possible in understanding some of the prospects that you have high on your board. And it's clear that Shedeur is high on their board, even though we view Shedeur Sanders as a top 10 pick. But to your next question, if Shedeur happens to fall outside the top 10, if you're Pittsburgh, you got to find a way to package up a nice potential trade for a team that you can move up to go get Shedeur Sanders. Now, all of that is pertaining to if he falls outside the top 10. I don't think so, because I think if he's there at 9, I think the New Orleans Saints would draft him. But if the Saints did the unthinkable and drafted another position, if you're Pittsburgh, you got to find a way to make something happen and go get your quarterback of the future.
Yeah, man, it's a swap of basically you have to get from where they are using this nerd valuation system I found.
Nerds. Brian,
it's definitely going to be how you want to play it. It's going to be a first rounder this year and a second rounder and maybe more, or a first rounder and a next year's first rounder to move up if he is in that top 10.
Yeah, no question. Because the thing is about Pittsburgh, even if you sign Aaron Rodgers, if Aaron Rodgers becomes the quarterback for this season, you're basically putting a Band-Aid on a injury that needs surgery. You still need a quarterback moving forward, because Aaron Rodgers probably won't be there in 2026. So if you're in this position, you got to go get your quarterback of the future and build around like you did years ago when you drafted Big Ben in 2004.
You like the Browns going back to Joe Flacco, one-year deal, $4 million. That comes down today. I mean, again, they got Kenny Pickett, whoop-de-doo. They got Joe Flacco, who did lead them to the playoffs. Deshaun Watson is rehabbing. What are the Browns thinking here, B-Mac?
You know what, Carl, Mike? Only the Browns know what the Browns are thinking. Come on, man. I mean, Joe Flacco was in the car pickup line a few years ago. You went and brought him in. He played pretty good football. He got in the playoffs. Joe Flacco, once again, in the car pickup line, and you gave him another one-year deal. So who's the starting quarterback for the Browns?
I have no idea.
Is it Two Glove Kenny? Is it Joe Flacco? Either option you're not really excited about, especially when you're playing in the AFC North. So if you're Kevin Stefanski, now I'll say this, guys. They're in a very, very good position to get a young quarterback, but it seems like they're going to attack other positions. So I don't know what the Browns are thinking, but the Browns are doing what the Browns usually do, confuse all of the people on the outside looking in, because we have no clue about the direction and what they're trying to do, especially bringing in Joe Flacco along with Kenny Pickett, who they traded for weeks ago.
Thing is, man, you know, we're just trying to get rid of Kirk Cousins. You know, we just want to get rid of him. And the only way we see anywhere, any plan would be the Steelers, you know, not having to deal with Aaron Rodgers. And who knows? And have you heard anything, by the way, about Aaron Rodgers? Anybody got any idea what this guy's going to do?
No. Only Aaron Rodgers knows what he's going to do. And he has two options. You play with Pittsburgh because that's the only team that wants you to be their day one starter, or you retire. So maybe he's kind of going through this back and forth process of, should I walk away from the game or should I give it one more time? But to your point, if Aaron Rodgers is not there, if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, you got to take a flyer at Kirk Cousins, because the free agency market is very, very slim at the quarterback position. I, for one, thought Cleveland might take a chance on Kirk Cousins before signing Joe Flacco. I felt like that would make sense for both sides, for Atlanta and for Cleveland. But with them adding Joe Flacco, I think they will be out of the running of the Kirk Cousins situation, regardless of what they do in the draft. So if you're Pittsburgh, I mean, you continue to wait on Aaron Rodgers. Think about this, guys. We're literally 2 weeks away from the draft. Pittsburgh don't have a quarterback.
Well, that's, I was going to ask you, Bryant, what, as a guy that played in that organization, I asked Carl this yesterday, when does the Steelers organization say enough is enough? And they say, oh, you know what? I know we've heard from some of the players, like, you know, like Hayward, but when do the Steelers say, that's it? I need a draw a line in the sand date. You're in or you're out.
That's the thing. But now it's like this, Carl, Mike, you waited this long. Mm-hmm. You might as well wait it out. Think about it. We're 2 weeks away from the draft. The Steelers, it seems like they put all their eggs in one basket. Now, does that basket have a bottom? Does it have a bottom? Because if it don't, all your eggs gonna fall through. And that is what we're waiting to see. Because you allowed Justin Fields to leave for $30 million, two-year deal. That didn't make any sense. You allowed Russell Wilson to leave to New York for basically $10 million with incentives. That didn't make any sense. Because you were putting all your eggs in one basket for Aaron Rodgers. So now, if Aaron Rodgers happens to say, you know what, I'm done. I'm walking away. It's been a great ride. What do you do now, Pittsburgh? Yeah. Now you have no leverage at all.
Mm. Sounds like you're mad at Mike T. That's just me.
It's Dukes and Bell at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're talking with Bryant McFadden, two-time Super Bowl champion, as we get ready for the NFL draft, just less than 2 weeks away now, guys. And as we start to break down all of this stuff, I want to get your thoughts again. Has anything changed for you on these secondary guys? Now, look, I don't think we're drafting the corner or number one over or our first overall pick, you know, whether we're at 15 or elsewhere in the first round. But has any of that changed for you as we get closer and closer? Because, again, you know, maybe you start to look a little closer at these guys and you go, all right, you know what, maybe this guy is a little bit better. Or is it simply about fit, B-Mac?
No, great question, because, you know, I've been going back and forth as we get closer to the draft. My number one cornerback is Travis Hunter. Now, he's also the number one wide receiver. Yeah, Atlanta, you don't have a shot in getting Travis Hunter.
No.
That's not happening, all right? My number two cornerback, I know most of the consensus, they have Jahdae Barron from Texas. But for me, my number two is Maxwell Hairston from
Kentucky,
Mississippi.
Hairston?
I'm sorry, Kentucky.
Kentucky. Yes,
Trey Amos is at Mississippi. Maxwell played at Kentucky.
Yes.
I really love his game, man. He reminds me a little bit of Devon Witherspoon and how twitchy he is, his short area quickness. And, of course, he went to Indy and he stamped a high 4.2.
Mm-hmm.
He can really, really run. The issue for him, evaluating his 24 tape, it's a little difficult because he was dealing with a shoulder injury. But if you really want to see what type of player he is, go back to his 2023 season when he was healthy and just look at what he did. He is a very, very feisty corner, and he plays with a big man mentality. And he's fast, he's quick, and think about this, guys. He's battle-tested. He's played against the highs of the highs in terms of some of the wide receivers he's faced in the SEC. So that is like how I see my board. And if you have Jahdae Barron number two, I'm okay with that. You know, it's all about personal preference. But Maxwell is a guy who, number one, he will be a first-round pick.
Mm.
And I wouldn't be surprised to see him go in the high teens, in the early teens, because a lot of teams really have high value on him and what he can do for their organization.
See, that's the thing. That's why Carl always mocks me when I talk about these mock drafts, because depending on where you look, like the PFF nerds, they got him in the second round. And that's why it's hard for the fan to kind of go, okay, is this guy going to be there? Because if he's there in the second round for the Falcons, that's perfect.
Nah, he's not going in the second round. No, that ain't happening. Matter of fact, I had a conversation with individuals I know from an NFC team, and he was basically talking about how their organization view him, and they have him as their number one corner on their board. And see, that's the thing. When you talk about these conversations, you know, one team might have Maxwell as the number three cornerback on their board. Mm-hmm. Another team might have Maxwell as the number two or number one. Mm-hmm. Years ago, remember when Devon Witherspoon went as high as he did to Seattle? I think he went top five.
Yeah.
That surprised everyone, but Seattle had him as their top corner on their board along with other organizations that were following Seattle. So that's the thing about the draft that I like. When you think you know what you're going to see, you don't know.
Yeah.
Maxwell can run, man. Mike and I, we've been talking about it. I saw the kid a couple of times. And you're right about the shoulder injury. It's funny because I had heard from folks at Kentucky, like, he's great, but his tackling needs to improve. But it gets back to the injury, doesn't it, B-Mac? Like, that is why maybe the tackling has been questioned, is because, hey, I was dealing with his shoulder. We'll see. Again, he's going to be at the top of the board. We're talking with Brian McFadden. A couple other things for you before we let you go, man, as we talk about the upcoming draft. I want to get your thoughts on these guys that are moving at the quarterback spot. We spent a lot of time on Shador and obviously Cam. Are you buying this wave of movement that we're seeing or at least hearing about for Jackson Dart? Do you think he is the third best quarterback in this draft?
I can say he is the third best quarterback, but there's a nice gap of separation between one and two compared to three.
Okay.
In my opinion. And see, the thing about this quarterback draft is only top heavy. Right. Mm-hmm. In terms of quantity, there's not a lot. There lies the opportunity for Jackson Dart. Now, one thing I'm not buying, and even if it's on the clearance rack, I'm not buying it. You're not going to sit here and tell me Jackson Dart is better than Shador Sanders.
No, I agree with that.
If you have Shador at your two, you're not going to tell me Jackson Dart is right there with Shador.
Yeah.
That's not the case. None. I'm not taking that.
Okay, well, wait.
Me personally.
I'm with you. Let me ask you this because we're running out of time. Where are you at on Jalen Milroe?
Jalen Milroe is a second-round type product, in my opinion. Late second-round, best-case scenario. The issue for Jalen Milroe, and you guys watch a lot of SEC ball, he's too inconsistent. Like, Jalen Milroe is the type of player, when you watch him play, you need to have some garlic next to you because your blood pressure is going to go up and down, right? You praise him. Wow, Jalen, great job. Think about the Georgia game. Think about all the darts he was throwing in the Georgia game, the dimes. And then you go and look at what against Vandy. Jay, what are you doing? What are we doing? Like, there are so many oh-no moments with Jalen Milroe, and it really bothers you. I mean, it can really get under your skin. That's the issue. But in terms of athleticism, I'll tell you this much. If he goes into a great situation where he can get the best coaching that's available, just imagine, this is a hypothetical, the Rams. If Sean McVay gets his hands on Jalen Milroe in an ideal situation where he's not required to play his first year, he just sits, he learns from Sean, he learns from Matthew Stafford, understands the ins and outs of being a professional quarterback, and then from a year and a half, 2 years now, you give him the keys. Think that's a great scenario for a guy like Jalen Milroe because he's going to get the proper coaching to be able to excel and be able to deliver consistency in the National Football League.
All right, man, we'll be watching these corners. Again, I got guys, Carl, that I say I could have in the second round, and then B says, not happening. So we'll see.
Maxwell?
Yeah.
Call Mike. Maxwell ain't going to be there in the second round.
Hey, by the way, you put any stock? I know we got a jet. Real quick, 30 seconds. Any stock in them going tackle? Or are they just simply talking to tackles because other teams will be looking at the tackles?
Who, Atlanta?
Yeah, to protect Penix's blind side.
Listen, if Atlanta takes a tackle in the first round, I'm not a drinker, but I'll probably be drunk. That wouldn't make any sense.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Looking to improve your diet in the new year? Try seeing a personal dietitian with Nourish. Nourish has hundreds of dietitians who specialize in a variety of health concerns, including weight loss, gut health, and more. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your personal dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on sports networks. Availability varies by zip code and package. New customers. Service renews monthly unless you cancel. Choice package required. Restrictions apply.
It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's talk to our man Ryan Roberts, NFL draft analyst from A to Z Sports, that is. I want to start with the edge rushers because this is a need for us here in Atlanta. And I want to ask your opinion about Mike Green. A lot of people have us connected to him, kid out of Marshall. He showed out at the Senior Bowl. He certainly led the country in sacks. What is your take on him, and is he better than Shamar Stewart or any of the guys that seemingly are in front of him, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think when you're talking about Mike Green, he is one of the more talented just pure pass rushers in this class. Like, he is super nimble, really bendy, has a pretty good pass rush plan already for a guy that's a pretty young player still. So I think he's more projectable on passing downs for sure. The question is, you know, it's like if you compare him to a Shamar Stewart, for instance, Shamar Stewart has more upside as a all-around end, right? Like a guy that's going to be able to play against the run, a guy that maybe can play from multiple alignments as well, depending on what your defensive structure is. But Mike Green, I think, is definitely the more pro-ready pass rusher day one. Like Shamar Stewart, I think year one, it's going to be kind of like Trayvon Walker year one for Jacksonville, where it, you know, he only has like four sacks or something, and you're just going to kind of be like, I'm not sure if that was a great pick. But you're more on the play of like year two, year three. So if you have patience, I think Stewart could be a really good player, obviously. If you move back, I think James Pierce Jr. from Tennessee could be an interesting conversation. But if you're intent on just adding a guy that you know day one is going to come into Atlanta and improve the pass rush, which I know they need at a desperate level, I think Mike Green is definitely a pro-ready pass rusher. I just think that you might need to temper your expectations as far as like his ability against the run early on.
Right, Ryan, we have no patience. We're trying to get back in the playoffs for the first time in 7 years. One of the conversations is Ryan Roberts joins us, guys, NFL analyst from A to Z Sports, is what exactly are the Georgia Bulldogs? And if you read some of these mock drafts, Mykel Williams could go anywhere from the top 10 to falling all the way to the bottom third. Is Mykel Williams going to be a guy that becomes an elite edge rusher, or is he just another one of those Georgia players he's hard to handicap, even though in college he was an elite sack guy, but can he be that guy at the next level?
I think he's going to be an impact run defender for sure. I mean, like, he is 6'5", he's 265 pounds, he's got long arms, he's super physical, and he's explosive. I think that, and he played at Georgia, and they obviously value stopping the run at a supreme level. So he has that in his arsenal very early on. I struggle with him as a pass rusher, and if we're talking about him being, like, an impactful overall player, I think he might just, I don't want to say he is what he is, but I think that he might end up just being kind of a low-volume sack guy. It doesn't mean that he can't create pressure. Doesn't mean he can't get some quarterback hits, but I think he's going to more or less be a guy that's going to have 6 to 7 sacks a year and play really good in the run game. Like, that's more of what he is to be. I just don't think he has natural bend. I don't think he – I just don't think he has a pass rush arsenal that is – I think it's a bit overstated, to be honest, right? Like, he's a speed to power guy, which you can win on the NFL level, but I just don't think that he – I think he lacks a little bit of nuance as a rusher. So I think he's more like a 6 to 7 sack a year guy and a really good run defender. Where you quite value that in this class, I think it's a little bit of a question, because it is a – I mean, it's a really deep edge rusher class. In theory, Atlanta could find value in almost every round this year, potentially, if you look correctly. But I think that like, in a vacuum, I think 15 is a little too early for Mykal Williams, for my taste. But it is very possible that he could go before that, and I could be totally wrong on that.
Ryan, we are getting a little long in the tooth. Jake Matthews has been as durable as any tackle in the NFL. But as the offensive line ages, there are rumors out there about the Falcons potentially thinking about offensive line. Tell me about these tackles, and how good are the offensive linemen in this draft to you?
Man, it's not a great tackle class if you're looking for a true left tackle. Now, there's some guys to still be excited about. Like, if Josh Simmons out of Ohio State never got hurt, and he got hurt during the Oregon game, has been dealing with a patella tendon injury, if he never got hurt, I do think that he would be an easy person that people would be rejecting in the top 15. But, you know, we have to then have the conversation about medicals and what the long-term versus short-term and, like, those types of conversations, because he got hurt, you know, during the second half of the season. So, like, what is the availability going to be in year one? And there's a lot of miscellaneous things that go in there. But I do like him a lot as a pure left tackle. But after that, it's a little bit of a mixed bag. Like, a lot of people like Armin Membu out of Missouri. He's a pure right tackle type, though. Is he going to be able to play left tackle? That's a question. Will Campbell is a guy that some people love it inside a guard. Some people like to tackle. I think he's going to get a chance at tackle. He's about as rock solid as you can find, but he's not overly – he's not a dynamic athlete, and he's lacks a little bit of length. So how is he going to handle against some of the longer, more explosive edge rushers? That's a little bit of a conversation. And Kelvin Banks is a little bit of the same. He's longer than Campbell, but you want him to play on an island against the best pass rusher on the blind side? I have some question marks. So I think Josh Simmons is a really good left tackle, though, if he's healthy long term. Outside of that, there's not a ton of pure left tackles in this class, guys that I feel really comfortable on an island on the blind side.
It is Ryan Roberts with us, guys. Duke Sabel. We're live at Twin Peaks in Augusta for the Masters, talking some NFL from A to Z Sports. Whatever the Falcons do, they're going to disappoint the fanboys. It's kind of a tradition here in Atlanta. What about corner? We know that Travis Hunter is in kind of in a world of his own, but some of these other guys, hard to kind of figure, because some of the corners have been injured. Some guys haven't been able to give the full pro day workout. What do you think about corner for the Falcons?
I think it's a really deep class for corners. So, I mean, it could even extend past the first round conversation if you're looking just for like a cornerback too, even. It's right in that range of like 15. I think there's a chance that Will Johnson from Michigan could be there, and I think he's one of the more overthought prospects in this class because he's been banged up and he wasn't able to test, and, you know, there's just some unsettling as far as like not having enough data points on him. If you're more of a zone-based system, I think a Jahdae Barron out of Texas could be interesting. He's a kid that can kind of play inside and out a little bit, kind of like a Jair Alexander type for what he's been able to do with the Packers. And I think in that range, I think that those are a couple guys to keep a close eye on. If you're a potential move-back team, and I don't know what Atlanta ends up doing, but if you're a move-back team, then the back end of the round one does have a couple really interesting options, like Azariah Thomas out of Florida State if you want a more press-man corner. If you want a guy who's a little bit more fleet of foot and more of an off-man corner, then I think a Maxwell Harrison out of Kentucky. Maybe even go with Siobhan Revelle out of ECU, who's kind of that height, weight, speed freak that's coming off the injury. So there's a lot of corner options, and even if you get into day two, there's a ton of dudes. So this is a good year to need a cornerback, excuse me, not as good offensive tackle as we just spoke about, but the corner class is very deep this year.
Ryan, what's the fuss on Shedeur Sanders? Do you like him? Do you think he's ready?
I guess comparative to where other people have him, both the highs and lows, I would say I'm neutral on him. I mean, like, I don't dislike him. I had like a early day two grade on him, like an early second in a vacuum. And so, and I like a lot what he brings to the table. I think he's the most accurate quarterback in the class. I think he's got a snap delivery. I think he's pretty creative at times. But there is a general, like, just lack of physical tools. I mean, he's not a great athlete. He's not going to win outside the structure a ton. He's also a guy that has very NFL average arm strength, maybe slightly below average. So I think in a usual class of quarterbacks where you have a couple guys that maybe are top 10 worthy, I think he's more in the mid to late first round conversation, and you're okay with taking him in that type of range. I do think in this class, after Cam Ward, you're looking for that guy, and I still do think that Shador is going to be the first quarterback, second quarterback taken, excuse me. I have questions if that's going to be top 10 at like with the Saints at 9, or if he's going to slide down a little bit, so maybe even trades up for him. So I like him. Don't love him. I think he's potentially an average starter on the NFL level, but I do see a lack of a ceiling for him.
It's a Ryan Roberts, guys. How many mock drafts, by the way, do you do? I mean, are you like me to get on these dopey websites and do like 15 in your sleep, or you're above it?
Leading up, I'm doing at least a three-rounder almost every week, and then we're doing a lot of team-centric mocks. So, like, I've done some Falcons mocks recently. I've done, you know, just seven-rounders for each and every team. So, I mean, last week I probably did seven if you're just kind of the team mocks. For whatever reason, people love the things, man. They read them. Right. So if they read them, I'll keep writing them, right? So
bigger nerd than me. All right, Ryan, one of the guys that I keep mocking because he's always there, and this is one that, you know, there's some websites that don't talk about the off the field but about attitude and focus. James Pierce, who looks like kind of checks all the boxes for a team that needs an edge rusher like the Falcons.
Yeah, I did a mock last week where I still – and it was more of a – not a predictive mock. This was more of a what would I do type of conversation. And I think some of the stuff about James Pierce is a little overstated. I've heard some of the work ethic stuff too. I have. But, like, we're not talking about anything criminal. We're talking about maturity stuff, right? But he is 6'5" plus. He's almost 250 pounds now. He's long. He's explosive. He's got a pass rush arsenal. He is the second best edge in this class after Abdul Carter, in my opinion. But I think a team's going to get a gamble on him now, or a value on him now, I should say. Like, they're going to take him in the back end of the first round. And if his head's screwed on tight, if he's a part of a good regime that has good structure around it, he could end up being maybe the best just pure pass rusher in this class. But, you know, we have to get past some of those character concerns, but he's certainly talented.
As always, thank you for stopping by, Ryan Roberts. Great job. Check out his stuff, guys. NFL Draft Analyst for A to Z here on Dukes and Bill. We'll talk soon. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you guys so much. Have a great day.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
The horn sound.
This is Catching Up with Coonan. Brought to you by Georgia Natural Gas. Cut the cold and cost this winter. When you lock in a low fixed rate from G&G, it's that simple.
Let's talk to Steve Coonan, Hawks CEO. Steve Coonan, man, hope you are doing well. It's been a couple of weeks. Obviously, you had business going on, but it is good to have you on the show and back where you belong. And last night, the Hawks won. They're back on the road tonight against Philadelphia. But first and foremost, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. I'm just enjoying life, the Masters. Hopefully, we get a win tonight, clinch the eighth position and go into the play-in with momentum.
Right on, man. Just hoping that Trey can maybe take over a series. We were talking about, you know, his ability to get him in there a couple of years ago. It's tough without having like the true, you know, sort of Scottie Pippen to his Jordan, you know, the Robin to his Batman. We got guys, you know, we definitely have a great bench, Steve, but I mean, do you still see this, do you still feel this team can make a run?
I do. I mean, you know, I hate to play the oldies, but this is where you really miss Jalen Johnson, to your point, right? You know, Batman and Robin,
right?
You arguably your best all-around player, and you know, with the defense is not playing, you're not at a great advantage. But anything can happen in the playoffs when the roster tightens, and so does the sphincter.
Steve, for those who don't know, the play-in, can you explain just from our standpoint where we currently stand? What would it take for us to get into the playoffs and have a first-round series against either, you know, the Celtics or the Cavs as it looks right now?
I would be honored to. The play-in is entering its fourth year. The seventh-place team in the division, it used to be that the top eight made the playoffs. Now, to make it more interesting and make more teams, you know, competing, is that the seventh and eighth team play, the ninth and tenth team play. So we'll be in the seventh and eighth bracket, and we will play, hopefully, Orlando on the road on Tuesday night for the first play-in game. If we win, we automatically are in the playoffs, and we'll play Boston starting the following that weekend. If we stub our toe against Orlando, then we will host a home game against the winner of the 9 and 10 game on Thursday, next Thursday.
Right, so Bulls and Heat.
Correct. So you get the advantage of two swings of the bat, if you will, if you're seventh or eighth, and you have the disadvantage of win and in or lose and go home if you're 9 or 10. So Hopefully. We can go down to Orlando, handle business, which we've done before this season. We've done this season. And have a great playoff with the Celtics, who seem to bring out the best in us. But we beat Cleveland twice this year also.
Right. The thing is, and we're going to see the Magic, ironically, we're going to see them to wrap the season up. And then, as you said, we may have to go down to Orlando. We do struggle against their big guys. You know, Banchero 6'10", Wagner 6'10". We were talking earlier, and again, we're still, yes, as you said, the season is still not over. But in the offseason, I would think we'd like to get a little more size. It just seems like when we go up against really bigger athletic front courts, that sometimes creates some mismatches for us.
Yeah, I mean, we totally agree. You know, Okongwu's been playing incredibly well. You know, since the All-Star break, he's been really, really good, but he is only 6'8", and size does matter. So I think during the offseason, we need some big fellas down here in Atlanta.
It is Steve Kuhn and Hawks CEO. I want to get your opinion. The league has hit Ja Morant with a big fine, and I'm just curious, not to, you know, specifically put you on the spot about his celebrations, but just these celebrations, generally speaking, and what have you talked to the commissioner about, and what do they say in these meetings where they feel like some of this stuff is inappropriate, some isn't, some is? And Ja has gone from the gun-toting, pointing the gun at the bench to now a make-believe, you know, grenade that he's releasing into the crowd. And I'm using him because he's the latest to do this, but he's not the only one. Steve, what's the league and what's said in these meetings?
Candidly, I've never seen anybody else really do this. I mean, he's almost reminds me of the Roadrunner and Coyote.
Right.
You know, what's next? And he had a quote last night that if somebody objects, he'll just come up with the next thing. I think what he's trying to say is that he's explosive, he's on fire, a lot of words. I think what he fails to understand is violence permeates our society. And we as a league do not want to have our game used to promote any kind of violence, even if it's a little cartoonish.
Right.
And I just think that I don't know what point he's trying to make. I truly don't.
Yeah, there seems to be a maturity thing. A maturity thing in that locker room. I'm going to put words in your mouth. You're talking about another basketball team. Steve Kuhn is with us, guys. Hawks CEO here on the Wade Ford.
Oh, now you have to announce my name.
.com hotline. Steve is in no way endorsing that Ja Morant is a very immature athlete who's got to grow up. And that whole team, basically, Carl, is just a bunch of turds. But I'm sorry, Steve, your thoughts moving forward about this Masters tournament. Carl and I are just glued to the TV like anybody who plays golf, whether you're a hacker, you're really good at it. I mean, it goes without saying that, you know, the broadcast is just exquisite from CBS, but now what we're looking at with this leaderboard, it's setting up for what should be just I can't imagine it's not generating some big numbers TV-wise.
Oh, I think so. It's funny. I'm sitting here watching The Matrix, meaning I'm watching four screens at once. today, I got an email very early this morning that said our building, 101 Marietta Street, lost water pressure. We'll all have to work remote today. And I was, oh, that is a shame. Let's call a plumber on Monday to come out and get that figured out. And I've enjoyed my ESPN Plus since literally 8:30 this morning. I've been watching because there's nothing better than the Masters on television.
No, there isn't.
Nothing better. Both the beauty, the you know, Justin Rose comes out of nowhere. Bryson, big beefy Bryson's not beefy anymore. Rory messes up yesterday, comes back with an incredible 66 today. And then you've got my pick, Shane Lowry, who's in the mix. And Scottie Scheffler just had another bogey. So he's back where he ended yesterday.
Yeah,
he's 4 under. And the wind is picking up. And, you know, there's potentially some rain coming. So there's just nothing better than the Masters.
I bought
pimento cheese today.
You're ready.
You have to do it.
I'm ready, baby.
You have to do it. Steve, you know, a few years ago when we let Nate McMillan go and Quinn Snyder came on, I think it was 20 games, I believe, right, if I remember correctly.
Mm.
And everybody around the league was like, what are they doing? This isn't. And then, you know, this week we see Mike Malone get let go. I mean, the week of the start of the playoffs, basically, and, you know, what's going on in Memphis. And my point is, sometimes we don't know what's going on inside these organizations. But how difficult are those decisions? Because Mike and I were kind of taken back with the Malone decision, but then we come to find out, you know, there were some things going on between the general manager and obviously the head coach.
Yeah, I mean, a team really doesn't have its politics you know, public and worn on its sleeve. And I can't really talk about the Denver situation because I was as shocked as anybody else. It does seem odd, and it just seems like they felt they had to make a change prior to the playoffs. And, you know, with three games left, you usually don't see that happening. So I don't know. I mean, you saw in the NFL, some of these trends just kind of go from sport to sport, where the Jets fired a coach after nine games. And, you know, it looks like not much is surprising anymore, but there are real politics inside of locker rooms and inside of organizations. And there's also performance and expectations, and somebody who appears to be doing a great job, you know, public facing, might not be doing what was agreed upon internally. So there's a thousand different possibilities. I'm not going to speculate on them, but it does seem like it is a bit odd.
Steve Kuhn is with us, guys. He is the Hawks CEO, joins us here every week, and great to catch up. He's also a former TV executive. That's why we ask about, you know, TV shows and what they're doing. The LIV Golf thing is pretty funny. Carl and I were talking about LIV is on Fox now, and nobody even notices. The numbers are just, they're actually doing half the numbers that the Tomorrow's Golf League in the virtual setting down in Palm Beach was doing. So at some point, do you think the PGA has all the leverage in this? And I mean, and how do they leverage it to get the merger together?
I don't know. I think TV numbers are leveraged when you're talking about Saudi Arabia, who's willing to put in, you know, incredibly significant funds, because at the end of the day, it still is a business. Right. I surely would like to see it together. I hate seeing the best players in the world only four times a year.
Right.
You know, and it's been almost 2 years since they agreed June 6th of 2023 that they were going to find a way to come together. And they've used everybody from the president on to help negotiate. So I'm really not sure what's going on, but I think the game of golf is suffering because of that. The president of LIV Golf, who is the former president of the Philadelphia 76ers, said this weekend, "You can grade me. We're going head-to-head with the PGA." That was last weekend. Right. And they got beat by NBC running the Valero Open by, you know, 400%.
Right.
So I don't think his grade would be, it kind of probably look a little bit like mine in college, but that's another story for another day. There's no heat around LIV Golf. There's no understanding really what it is. They're playing, you know, sometimes in Australia, and the next week they're in Miami. And then, so I don't really understand what they're doing, but I think they're hurting the game in a really big way. I think the Masters, the beauty of the Masters is it's bigger than the game or the tours. But once this recedes, they'll go back to both struggling.
Yeah.
Steve, you disappointed G-Day's not going to be on TV?
Yeah, but all it is an exhibition.
Sure,
you know.
Sure,
but I remember the first time that, you know, when we were told to be down there in Athens by Kirby, and 92,000 of us were
right.
And I just think that I think Nebraska and one other school, USC, said they weren't going to go do a spring football game because they didn't want other teams, you know, scouting for NIL. And I think that's just a real problem. And I think that might be one of the reasons we're not on TV, is that I think it's become – I was fortunate and got to go to sit with Kirby at a Hawks game this year and his family, and it was a lot of fun. But we were swapping stories because he manages professionals with much easier free agency than we do.
I mean, I knew that once, you know, we had the lawsuits that were out there, eventually this was going to happen. But we had a story today about Nico Iamaleava up there at Tennessee, and the story is he's not at their practice, and there's multiple reports saying that his camp is looking for $4 million, and he's not even like the seventh or eighth best quarterback in the SEC last year. It's just like the world's going off its rocker.
Yeah, I mean, Dom Raiola committed to Georgia and then got an incredible offer from Nebraska. He's gone.
Right.
You know, I feel bad. How do you manage that? How do you plan for that? How do you compete with it? And the problem is this all could have been solved years ago. And as a longtime Georgia fan, let's never forget A.J. Green suspended three games for selling a jersey.
Yep. Right.
You know, and on and on and on.
Todd Gurley, yeah.
Yeah, Todd Gurley also. And they should have paid these kids, you know, some money, and none of this would have happened.
Yeah. And again, I always thought, because we used to have, Carl, we'd have these arguments and we used to joke around, like, because folks felt like, oh, no, it's a, the amateurism of it. Amateurism of it. I mean, Steve, all you would have had to do is give like a tiny percentage of the just the TV numbers alone. And everybody could have had six figures and we'd all get on with our lives.
Again, fairness.
Right.
And now they're paying the price.
Yep.
And so I don't blame the athlete. I blame the institutions.
Great stuff. Steve Koonin, we will see what our Hawks do tonight against Philly.
Let's get a win tonight.
Yeah.
Let's go up for the play-ins, and then let's be there for the playoffs. We want spring basketball in Atlanta, and we need the fans' help. So please come out and help us.
Danny Green, if you're a fan of the NBA, make sure to check out his podcast, Inside the Green Room with Danny Green. Listen to the Green Room with Danny Green on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Danny, we're going to talk about some of the more national NBA stories in just a moment. Want to start here in Atlanta, though, with the Falcons. Do you feel that the Atlanta Hawks have any real play-in / playoff potential this season?
They have play-in potential for sure. But if they match up with one of those two seeds, the top seeds, I don't know how far they're going to – I do know how far they're going to be going home soon. Playing against a Boston or Cleveland, that's your reward for winning the play-in. It's a hell of a reward. So, yeah, they're going to be going home. But they are a good team. I think, you know, the injury of Jalen Johnson really kind of was a big hit. They had him, I would say, you know, they have some really good playoff aspirations, but without him, they can surprise some people in the play-in. Outside of that, I don't see much else.
How does it, Danny, I mean, how does it feel like Atlanta's in this spot every year? I feel like we're in, well, you know, so to speak, play-in purgatory, and it just feels like every year we go through all these injuries. Where a main guy's hurt, and then every year we're fighting for a 7, 8, 9 just to get in to play in. And then, it, you know, like to your point, it's, well, if we win the play in, we're just going to be eliminated.
I mean, I think it's more so due to trades and injuries. The last couple of years, you guys have traded DeJounte, where it's hard to get rhythm. A lot of different coaches that Trey has played for, Trey Young. So a multitude of things. But this year, I think it was more so injuries. And so Jalen Johnson was a big hit, a couple other pieces. But you guys look like you have a really good core and foundation with that Dyson Daniels, Jalen Johnson, like the length that you guys had. And then also you guys traded DeAndre Hunter. So, yeah, Bogey is gone. It's hard to get a rhythm and build a chemistry with a group that has not been stable or consistent.
Speaking of Dyson Daniels, Danny, I know a lot of people kind of have him as the most improved player of the year. How is he not the defensive player of the year with what he's done on the defensive end? I know that maybe the metric might not be as good as some as others, but with the way he's played, the steals, he's made this team single-handedly a better defensive team.
100%, man. Unfortunately, in our game and most games, winning matters. So it's hard to put – I like what he's done. I like to put him in the conversation, but it's hard to make him the ultimate defensive player of the year when the team hasn't been successful or won enough games. Which is unfortunate, because even still, like I said, I liked, you know, Evan Mobley a lot. I liked Jaren Jackson a lot. And then out of nowhere, Draymond Green, you know, he came out of the woodworks. He, you know, did his own press conference and kind of led the charge with that. So and Golden State's been playing really well. But to me, honestly, you know, Draymond's been a great defensive force most of his career. I wouldn't put him in that conversation. I mean, I put him behind those three guys. But I definitely would have Dyson Daniels if the group was winning more. He would be my lead because, you know, I'm a guard biased, you know, guy. So it was always great to see a guard get a chance to win it. And, you know, the bigs have been great. So my choice would be Evan Mobley, honestly.
Former NBAer and Odyssey NBA insider Danny Green joining us inside the Green Room with Danny Green, his podcast. And so I'm going to use your own words against you here in a little bit. And you said in these award discussions that winning matters. And so Zachary Risacher is playing for the most competitive team in regards to the Rookie of the Year's discussion. Alex Saar, that team's a bum there in Washington. Obviously, the injuries affected their Stephon Castle. The Spurs are 14 games below 500. So by that manner of thinking, shouldn't Zachary Risacher be the Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, for that award is different. So I don't think winning matters as much when it comes to Rookie of the Year. It's rookie production. You know, it helps some to have a team that's winning. But, you know, most rookies that are good don't play for winning organizations. Or most rookies that are drafted high play for organizations that are rebuilding. So that's why that's a tough one, that award. So I don't think it matters as much when it comes to Rookie of the Year. So, yes, he can definitely be in the conversation. But I think the guy that's had the most consistent year for me has been Stephon Castle. You know, he's played more consistent. Obviously, they had some time where they were winning and playing well. But he's got the most consistent minutes. He's got the most consistent time of putting up some, you know, decent numbers. And so it was pretty open for this rookie class because there's so many ups and downs. Jared McCann had an injury. And then, you know, nobody's really stood out. So it was really up for grabs for anybody. But I just said I've gotten a chance to watch more of the Spurs play, so I can see Stephon more. So I may be a little biased. But, yeah, for the rookie year conversation, the winning doesn't matter as much.
Danny, who fires their head coach 2 years removed from winning an NBA title and their GM, I guess I should say, 14 games over? I mean, I know that the West is tight, but what is going on in Denver?
It's the league, right? It's a very impatient league. Nobody has the pace anymore. It's running thin, and they're moving players and coaches with the quickness. And I wouldn't do it, especially a week before playoffs. It doesn't sound sane. It sounds very like a bit huge mess, but I don't know what's going on. I'm not there. There's some rift between the two, I guess, you know, Calvin Booth and him, and I guess management didn't want to give them the opportunity to kind of redeem themselves and actually have a successful postseason to where they would have to keep them. So they just made the move quickly, and ultimately, I don't know if that wraps up your season, but it damn near puts, you know, a cap on it. A limitation. It's hard to go far without your leader, your main coach that's been there for that many years. And that Nikola's only played for. So I can't imagine him going far without him this season. But, you know, we'll see what they do in the summertime. I'm sure they're going to make some moves outside of management, but definitely players. And the West is going to be interesting all around for the playoffs this postseason and in the summertime.
The podcast is Inside the Green Room with Danny Green. If you like what you're hearing right now on the Midday Show with Danny, make sure to check that out as well. Odyssey NBA Insider and, of course, a knife's career in the NBA. Over the weekend here, Danny, the Lakers took it to OKC. In the rematch, before Luka was erroneously
Luka was ejected.
Yeah, before he, but before that, it was a 1-point game, maybe a 2-point game. They were right there, and that one I think was in OKC. Luka and LeBron maybe figuring things out. They could potentially, I think, get the 4 seed. Maybe does it feel like that team is rounding into becoming a threat, especially seeing what they're able to do against OKC when they had their whole team there?
Yeah, I mean, I said I'll be the one to admit I was wrong. I didn't think it was going to work, but they've been playing well. And when you have Luka on the floor, you always have yourself a chance with any group. Same with LeBron. You have them both together, you have a really damn good chance at winning some games in a playoff series. And Austin Reeves has just kind of figured it out and played really great alongside both of them and their others. So they've been able to play small ball and, you know, do some things where defensively they've been able to kind of, you know, be on a string and help to, you know, fix those, I guess, the holes that they've had. There was a stretch where it went, you know, kind of down. But offensively, they're just a force, and it's hard to guard them. So they always have a chance. And that could be a matchup that a lot of people want to see. It might happen. Then, you know, we might see some upsets in the West.
Well, you got the West covered. What about the East? I mean, I know Cleveland is kind of got that one locked up. But I don't know. For some reason, I don't feel like they're a team that can actually challenge Boston when it came down to it. Can they actually challenge Boston?
OKC?
No, Cleveland.
Oh, Cleveland. Yeah, I mean, I think so. So my issue is I think Boston's the best team in the league, and they're the defending champs for a reason, and they have the most pressure of winning again. The only issue that I have or concern with them I have is the health and with Porzingis. And you see how well he's played last couple nights against the Knicks. You know, he's a huge factor in that type of matchup. So if he's not healthy, that's the only way that Cleveland – I'm going to say the only way Cleveland has a shot, because anything can happen in the playoffs. Guys can get hot. They have the depth. They have the pieces. But I said I think Boston is the best team unless there's some issues with health, and that's the only way some other team sneaks in and challenges them and beats them.
Danny, final question for me, and I appreciate your time. We both do. And you can go – whichever way you want this one to go. It could be open-ended or open-door policy for you. Who's been the most disappointing team in the NBA this season now that the year's almost done?
Hell of a setup, man. But I think everybody has this on their page as number one, and that's probably the Phoenix Suns, and everybody knows this answer. For them to be eliminated from the play-in is very disappointing with the big three that you have there, especially even with KD and Book. You would think they at least get into a 10th spot. So they're not in that conversation. They're going to have to make some moves. And it's a Phoenix was very short-lived when they made the trade for Bradley Beal. Everybody thought this was going to be a big – even when they made the trade for Kevin Durant, it's going to be a big thing. And then they got Bradley Beal. Some people knew it wouldn't work, but they still thought they should be a playoff team. But you get those names in production or you get those names in contracts, you expect production. And if you haven't gotten it, then it's a huge disappointment. So
Philly a close second there? And 76ers second in there?
Yeah, probably. But they've had injuries. So they have a little bit of leeway, a little more of an excuse that Joel's been out all year, even though he played the summertime. So he probably should have rested some. But they've had even young guys injuries. Jared McCain, they even had guys sick. It's hard to find. There's kind of a Dallas situation where, you know, Dallas are trying to find guys so they don't forfeit. So it got bad on that side of it for Dallas and Philly. So Philly gets a little bit grace because they've had injuries.
Can Embiid come back and kind of be that guy he was? I mean, feels like he's been injured so much lately.
He's not that old, you know. So I think he can. I think he has a window of, you know, two or three more years of being that guy. We'll see how his body bounces back, how seriously he takes his health. And then, you know, we go from there. But I think he can. He has the ability. He still has a youth in his body. He's not that old to where he can't, you know, still play how he played in the MVP season only 2 years ago.
Danny, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate you joining us here in Atlanta.
Thank you, guys, man. I appreciate you.
There you go. That was Odyssey Sports NBA Insider Danny Green. Remember to check out Inside the Green Room with Danny Green on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
In one quarter, we've got 92.9 The Game's midday host, Andy and Randy, at a combined 12 feet, 3 inches, and just under 400 pounds. To the best of our knowledge. And in the other quarter, 92.9 The Game's reporter, Smokin' Joe Patrick, at an undisclosed height and weight because he likes to cause trouble.
Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. Joe Patrick out on the wadeford.com hotline. Joe, I know you've been doing our headlines this morning. You're certainly aware of the news in Cleveland. Joe Flacco joining the Browns. And Cleveland was kind of one of the commonplace picks for Kirk Cousins to end up. And so with them, let's just start here. Are they officially off the table in any pursuit of Kirk Cousins? And then if so, who is actually left on the table at the present moment, not presuming any training camp injuries or anything that can happen down the road?
Yeah, I do think that he's off the table for the Browns. I mean, when you look at this particular quarterback that they've signed in Joe Flacco, he's obviously somebody that has great affinity with that fan base, kind of leading them to the playoffs a couple of years ago. And so that, to me, like, it's just very hard to imagine them having signed a quarterback to any kind of deal and then also going to add another quarterback, especially a quarterback that we now well know has issues with organizations that don't have or that might have some sort of kind of competition or not a clear kind of hierarchy there at that position that he wants to be on top of. So I think the Browns are out of contention. I'm sure that the Falcons are, you know, not thrilled by that news that they saw come across, but, you know, I don't think that they're going to be all that perturbed by it, because I think that this, again, to kind of, I'm kind of rehashing something, before I get to your question, but, you know, it's just one of those things where I think every Falcons fan is expecting, it kind of thinks about the Falcons like they're holding a live grenade with Kirk Cousins here and that they've got to get rid, but I just really don't think that they think about the situation like that. I think they kind of think about it like the worst has already happened as regards to, you know, holding a live grenade or something like that. And if we can get, you know, if we can get rid of him, we obviously, you know, that's in our best interest at this point, most likely. But it's got to be in our best interest, meaning that they have to get something for it that is going to kind of cover their situation at the backup quarterback spot, which is not a valueless position in the NFL. And so I think the Falcons, you know, they'll just continue the course and see who comes along. And to that point, you know, there's a couple teams. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think, are the most obvious team that's just, like, without a quarterback right now. I think that when you look at Kirk Cousins, theoretically he can do the kinds of things. Like, he's shown in his career he can do the kinds of things that Arthur Smith, I think, would want. Maybe outside of really having the arm strength to really push the ball downfield for some of those shot plays. But overall, just in terms of utilizing play action and throwing over the middle on time within the structure of the plays, I think that's what Arthur Smith prefers in a quarterback, and I think that that's what Kirk Cousins can ideally do. But last year we didn't see him doing, I think, probably because of, you know, the situation he was feeling either with his Achilles or his ankle, is the way that he describes it. Not able to do some of that play action stuff, especially in the Arthur Smith style play action where you're running that out, that wide zone, and running play action off of that and kind of bootlegging out of that. So, but I still think that they're a good spot for him to land. And then there's this one that I just cannot get out of my head. And it feels unlikely because you never see these situations really happen, especially in the NFL, but the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, they're a team that, you know, they've been flirting around with Aaron Rodgers a little bit. Obviously, the Steelers have as well, and that's going to be another domino that will eventually drop at some point. But it just feels like they're a team that's maybe not totally confident with J.J. McCarthy, considering they haven't really been able to see him play within, like, the context of a full-speed NFL rep. And he came into the draft as being a guy who was going to be a more of a developmental type of player that was drafted in that first round. And so, you know, going back to a familiar coaching staff, a scheme that he would know, you know, familiar surroundings, I'm sure personal life would be great there. All that makes sense. It's just a matter of whether one, Kirk would want to go to that situation again with a rookie quarterback that they're invested in, just like the Falcons were here. And then also just kind of, you know, the feeling of kind of like going back to a place that you just left cannot be sometimes the most comfortable thing. But those are the two that I'm really looking out for at this point.
Yeah, and I to your point, Joe, I just don't think that they're going to give up anything. And I agree with you 100% about, look, we refuse to believe what we're told over and over again. It's like, hey, we're good. If we trade him, we trade him. If we don't, we're good. Hey, if put your GM hat on, you know, who's – because I've had like seven different players in this this draft timeline that have now been my favorite player, which is the equivalent to being the best player available on a team's board. Who's number one on Joe Patrick's board?
Well, for me, amongst like the realistic options that could potentially reach the Falcons at 15, for me, it's Mike Green. I think he's the most just dynamic, like kind of classic, like get after the quarterback style pass rusher that's out there outside of Abdul Carter. The question I have with Mike Green is more kind of scheme related, as like how he would fit in Ulbrich's defense alongside of an Arnold Ebikadie, because those two players are kind of a very similar profile. And so, I think just as a player, as a talent, he's the one I would want the most. I do kind of think though that he's going to be gone. He's not being really mocked as being gone in a lot of these selections, but I could totally see, just based on the traits that he has, him going much earlier, because it seems like the reason why he's falling in some of these mock drafts is some of the, you know, the off-field stuff. We've heard of these, you know, couple incidents that he's had, and, you know, how much teams actually know about that, how much, you know, could that come, you know, back into play at some point in his career. And I just think that there's going to be probably some teams out there who kind of, you know, are firm in saying that it's not going to be an issue for them, and therefore he's going to be one of the most talented players. So for me, he's that guy, Bo. And in general, I'm still, like, you know, of the opinion that they need to take an edge rusher in this first round, especially at the 15th pick. I think things get more interesting if they were to trade out of that and you get down into like maybe like the early 20s, you know, moving down seven or eight spots, something like that. That's where I think things would open up considerably in terms of who would the Falcons actually go for there. Because if that happens, and let's say that Mike Green comes off the board, maybe with, you know, a couple of these other top pass rushers, would they potentially go with a right tackle at that position? I mean, that's kind of heated up this past week with them kind of getting some private workouts or meetings with some of these guys. We've heard from Kelvin Banks the week prior, and then Josh Connerly this week. Makes sense to me that a team that's, you know, got a, you know, young quarterback would want to protect their blindside. We see teams do that all the time when they, you know, draft a quarterback. If they don't have that blindside protected, they address that as quickly as possible. Not that Caleb McGarry hasn't been bad, and I think that his pass protection has generally been kind of cast asunder, I should say, as the pass protector. I think he just gets beat by pretty badly by certain types of pass rushers.
Having said that, if
you don't address that and a speed rusher blows by him and hits Penix in his blind side and potentially, you know, God forbid, you know, keeps him out, injures him, that is the kind of thing that could end the GM's tenure and potentially even the head coach's. So for as much as people kind of don't want to see that addressed and, you know, think that, well, we can wait on this because we've got some other needs, You know, I think that that's not how a GM and a head coach would see that. So I think that that's very much in play. But I have a hard time seeing them actually drafting that player at 15. I think they would need to trade down and acquire more picks in order for them to do that, and that with that first pick they've got.
Joe Patrick, 92.9 The Game, Falcons beat reporter on the WadeFord.com hotline. We got about 90 seconds, 1 minute, Joe. So final question from us. Justin Simmons joined Kay Adams earlier this week and absolutely did not close the door on a return to Atlanta. How fascinated are you by that potential, and what are some of the factors that might slow that down, money or fit or whatever else you think of?
You know, I think it kind of is money more than fit. I think actually the fit would be all right. I think he's a smart kind of split field safety, which I think is what Olberg's going to use quite a bit. And I think that, you know, if he does come back, I don't know if it's necessarily to be a locked-in starter every game. Maybe he would be from the beginning of the season, but I think that he would be a profile player that the Falcons could use. And, you know, honestly, I like a good mentor, really, for, you know, some of these young players, especially DeMarco Helms. With what they've done at the safety position, guys, it makes me think that they're actually quite bullish on DeMarco Helms. And you can actually see it. When he got hurt last year, you could see kind of how devastated they were. And, of course, at that point, they turned to Justin Simmons. So I wouldn't rule Justin Simmons out, but I do think that it will be a similar situation to last year for him, where he's not probably going to be signing with a team until pretty late on. And who knows, maybe there could be something that involves Kirk Cousins and, you know, opening up more salary cap in order for that to happen.
Joe, thanks so much for the time today. We'll chat with you, your regular spot, 12:20 on Fridays here on the Midday
All
Show
right.
A week from now. Thanks.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.